This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
DIA Euro Meeting 2017 featured several explorations of how and where to incorporate real-world evidence into the regulatory review and approval process. Dr. Sandra Queter, Deputy Director in the FDA Office of International Programs Europe Office and liaison to the European Medicines Agency, helped lead these discussions in the Diamond Session titled Major Regulatory Challenges Enabling Decision-Making for Early Patient Access, Regulatory Tools and Sources of Real-World Evidence. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of the IEA's Global Forum. Dr. Queter joins us today to discuss the opportunities and challenges that real-world evidence presents to regulatory agencies and to the healthcare product industry they regulate. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Queter.
Thank you so much, Dr. Grignolo. It's nice to be here.
What is real-world evidence? How do you think about it?
We've struggled as a scientific and regulatory community with coming up with a shared vision of what it is. When I think of it, I think of real-world evidence as a very broad term that attempts to put a name to the concept of collection of data from healthcare settings and applying that data to the generation of evidence about the safety, effectiveness, and utility of medicines. As regulators, we're charged with ensuring that there is evidence of safety and effectiveness of medicines. And historically, that evidence has comprised data from formal clinical trials, which we all know are expensive and time-consuming. Yet, while we're collecting those data, and after the initial assessment of a medicine, medicines are being used by healthcare providers and patients across the globe to treat illnesses. And we don't seem to have a good way of collecting the data from that actual use in those settings to help us learn and refine our knowledge about the safety and effectiveness of medicines. And the concept of real-world evidence seeks to bridge those two spheres of inquiry.
The amount of real-world evidence is likely to increase, isn't it? What with wearable devices and electronic health records, electronic medical records. Some people are calling big data actually colossal data. So the massive data is increasing exponentially. How will the world and how will regulatory agencies deal with this enormous amount of data coming our way and their way and your way?
It's funny to think about, but in fact, the data have always been out there. We've just never been collected in an electronic manner so that large numbers of people can actually see how much there is. It used to be put down on paper and sitting in people's file cabinets. And now those file cabinets are digitalized. And so suddenly we see what's always been before us, but never had a window to. The challenges are that a lot of the methods for collecting those data are homegrown. They're individualized. Different healthcare systems have different ways of capturing the data, and they range from things like a Kaiser system that's largely centralized, might be largely centralized, to a group practice in a small town in Minnesota, to the VA healthcare system, none of which have a way of being pooled together to make sense of collectively. And that's our biggest challenge. Second to that is, in addition to the databases themselves struggling, we still have challenges with things like medical terminology and how, when I look at the elephant and I call it an elephant, is it the same as what you see as an elephant? Just simple terminology and how you characterize things. So in both of those spheres, we have big challenges. And then the third area of challenge is that while I firmly believe that as citizens of our society and patients, we all want our healthcare experience to be of use for the broader good, but at the same time, we want to make sure that personally identifiable information in our healthcare data is not readily available for the world to see. And so those three make for a very challenging recipe going forward.
To some extent, this reminds me of the early days of electronic submissions when everybody was trying their hand at homegrown electronic submissions before the ECTD came to the surface and became the standard. This suggests that perhaps there is a need for standards and leads me to another question, and that is, at the Glasgow Euro meeting, in your presentation, current status and challenges of early access and the opportunities of real-world evidence for regulatory decision-making in the U.S., you issued a call for action because, quote, you said, FDA cannot do this alone, unquote. May I ask you, what did you mean? Will FDA actually reach out formally to various constituents to get help and maybe come to a standard of some sort for the collection and management of real-world evidence?
We know we can't do this alone. I mean, let's face it, the FDA can't tell clinicians in their offices and medical practices or large healthcare systems what kind of terminology to use in their medical record system. That's not for us to do. So we need to be partnering with large organizations who also see it to their advantage to develop some standard ways of collecting data. And I like the analogy that you use of electronic data submissions. When I think of that, I think about there were only a few parties involved in that. It seemed an overwhelming task, but we got it done because everyone saw it in their best interest. Now, if we increase the number of participants and interested parties by orders of magnitude, that's what we're talking about. And yet we need leadership in all of those spheres to come together and say, this is in everyone's best interest and we need to find ways to do this. So I think there are a lot of parties who can contribute to this. We're working with some of them. Other government agencies are involved. And in fact, FDA has been engaged with the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, NIST. Whoever thought NIST and FDA would partner on something? But this is an area where we're beginning to have conversations. And I think that other parties need to be at the table, including academia, large healthcare systems, the pharmaceutical industry, and also representatives of patients who have a lot to gain from this, but also in many respects, it makes them uncomfortable, understandably so.
What about the payer and health insurance community? Are those stakeholders ones that FDA would reach out to as well as part of this overall effort?
Oh, I think they're already a part of this. If you think about CMS in the U.S., other health insurance companies, we all have an interest in this, in many of the same data points, often through different lenses, but the information that we seek is very much the same. And I think they experience the same things that we do, is how to find reliable data that is standardized from one setting to another in order to make decisions rationally.
Does this mean that in practice, while an agency like FDA would look to real-world evidence for purposes of assessing efficacy and safety, the payer community would look at real-world evidence for purposes of assessing perhaps cost-effectiveness and value to patients?
Yeah, I think so. You know, but it's all going to come from the same source, right? It's all going to come from healthcare records. And so we're coming at it in different ways. We do have some examples of where the agency is already using large sources, like through our Sentinel initiative. I mean, it's routine for us to be looking at safety data collected after marketing through this enormous database with, you know, what is it, I think, 43 million identifiable patients. That is routine for us already, but what we're talking about is being able to collect more detailed information and in different ways, prospectively.
You mentioned patients, and I'm so happy you did. I'm reminded that former FDA Commissioner Califf and others have said that the modern clinical research enterprise is broken, or at least in need of serious recalibration. The panel in Glasgow included also the president of the Duchenne Parent Project of the Netherlands. So in your view, how can patient groups help fix this, quote, broken enterprise, unquote?
You know, I can't speak for Dr. Califf and what he actually meant by broken. I think he probably meant a lot of things. What I think of it more of is it remains fragmented. And I think that the patient groups can help us pull that together. And I believe that many of them have already shown a willingness to do that. They've shown a willingness to find ways to educate the clinicians who are caring for them, particularly in some of these rare disease areas where the patient community and the clinical community are on the small side, but may not have previously been part of this enterprise that Dr. Califf referred to, and get them to think about how to collect data reliably that can ultimately be used to make regulatory decisions. Historically, clinicians who are taking care of sick patients, especially where the numbers are small or in very narrow niches of therapy, have not necessarily been the same people who are active participants in the activities related to getting new drugs developed and approved. And the patients have done a phenomenal job of helping us raise awareness of that and helping bridge parties who need to be talking to each other in a constructive way.
FDA has held a number of meetings, maybe a couple of dozen meetings with patient groups over the years as mandated by FDASIA. Are you referring to those meetings as channels of, shall we say, education from patients towards FDA?
Those meetings are a wonderful opportunity for FDA to really hear from the patient on a wide variety of things, in particular with a focus on what they perceive their health and their needs to be related to their disease and the kinds of endpoints and clinical trials that will resonate with them in conducting their lives. That's one area where bringing the patients in as a regulatory agency has been very useful to us. And I will say that FDA reviewers have said over and over again how helpful it is for them to be part of those meetings and listen, because we're there to listen. But I think beyond that, some of the very savvy patient groups have gone out in the other direction and gone to the research community and the medical practice community and said, look, we want our data to be useful in a regulatory setting, and we want to help you collect our data in a way that ultimately a regulatory body will find useful and reliable. You know, one thing that's interesting to me, Alberto, is I've always been amazed that one area where FDA has struggled is reaching out to the broad community of committed clinicians in practice and research, the ones who aren't already involved in doing clinical trials, and being able to get them on board to thinking about what they do in practice and how that might ultimately be useful to FDA or to the drug development enterprise. And I think patients are really helping us do that.
Some patient groups have argued over time that the endpoints that regulators look at are not necessarily, I would say, real world for patients themselves. And they might be useful as regulatory endpoints, but they don't make as much difference to patients' lives. Is that gap of understanding being bridged at this point through more intensive, frequent communications between regulators and patients?
Absolutely. And I think we have heard that, the agency has heard that message loud and clear. It's one of the reasons that those 20-some-odd meetings that you're referring to have been continuing. But in addition, the agency has put a large focus in the past 5 years on patient-reported outcomes and clinical outcome assessments as a major focus of our internal work. A lot of people aren't aware that in CDER, we have a highly expert group within the Office of New Drugs that focuses solely on clinical outcomes assessment and working with sponsors and patient groups and other researchers, including NIH, the PRO consortium, to develop good outcome assessment tools that are specifically relevant to the clinical outcomes that are important to patients.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll leave it at that. These are all my questions for today. Dr. Guida, you've been wonderfully generous with your comments and insights. Thank you very much for your time today. For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.